Federal News Radio has taken a series of exclusive surveys with members of the CXO community. CHCO is no exception to that. And today, to look at the results of our Chief Human Capital Officers survey, Catherine Medina of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council, it is a pleasure to see you. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And my colleague in studio joining me to as we look at this issue today, Emily Kopp, thanks for coming in and sitting in with me today to talk to Catherine. This survey is was directed to members of the CHCO community, Chief Human Capital Officers, and we're asking the kinds of questions you would expect. We're asking priorities for 2012 and so forth, and we have the results posted online now at federalnewsradio.com. As you looked over the broad results, what did you see that struck you? What did you see that heartened you? Anything that jumped out at you?
Well, my initial reaction was strangely a little comforted that the responses really mirrored the concerns that we're addressing already in the council, the priorities we've set, what our strategic goals are, and what the working groups are structured around. So I really was glad to see that though there are a lot of challenges and they're very serious, mm-hmm. we really have a start or a grasp on how to deal with them.
Tell me about the working group structure and what in particular they're focused on and so forth.
So 2 years ago, we decided that the council would work in a working group structure as opposed to a subcommittee, standing subcommittee. Mm-hmm. And that was a unanimous decision the council members made, feeling that the work could be more productive and focused. And so when we talk about the working groups, we are talking about a very organized and detailed group that has deliverables, objectives, a timeline, a chair, and requirements for every member that joins. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a free-for-all. It's not just, hey, I'm going to hop on this working group and, you know, see what happens.
Right.
You have a very clear idea of what that group is going to accomplish. And mm-hmm. that structure has served us very well over the last 2 years.
And it seems to me you won't have what you do have with subcommittees sometimes, which is a jockeying for position just because I want to be associated with that concept.
Right. I want to be known as
yes.
the chair of the Human Capital or Workforce Subcommittee.
Mm-hmm.
And I chair that for 2 years, but the question is, what do you produce?
What'd you do? What are some of the things that you've seen, and maybe it's a little too early to show tangible results from those, but what are some of the things that you're seeing already that are coming out of those working groups that are helping you move some of your wishes forward?
Well, it's actually not too early to see. The first two groups that we stood up were the Veterans Hiring Working Group, and that was clearly a very successful working group. We supported the president's executive order on veterans hiring. Last week, the director talked about the most recent results that we had, and we have raised the bar on veterans hiring by over 5% government-wide. That's an enormous achievement. For disabled veterans, we're at over 2% increase, so some really great results on that. Hiring reform is another one of our working groups. We are so successful with that group that we've been able to transition it into sort of the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first year, it was hiring reform. We were talking about the components of hiring reform. How do we make sure agencies are moving to resume only, et cetera? And now we feel like we've gotten the results that we were looking for. Agencies are, you know, 80% or better on the components. And we made a conscious decision last month at the CHECO Council meeting to actually rename this Hiring Excellence.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions in your survey talks about the stovepipe
mm-hmm.
with HR, between HR and the barriers between them and managers.
Yeah.
Hiring Excellence Working Group really is looking at those remaining barriers. And they're really more at the managerial level into the agency, and they really require sort of a different approach than
mm-hmm.
we're eliminating KSAs.
Yeah, yeah. It strikes me that that structure is really conducive to what you're talking about there, that as a need is met or you achieve a goal, it's not a situation where you have to blow something up and start over again. It sounds like a smoother transition to whatever the next phase or next step is in an issue that you're working on.
Yeah, again, when you outline your deliverables and your timeline, you get to that timeline, you say, did we accomplish what we set out to? Yes, we can. Okay, is the group dissolved? Or is there something else, another iteration? And with the hiring reform, we see a continuous need, but a totally different approach in a totally different direction.
All right. I want to get into the individual questions in this survey when we come back from the break, and I'm going to bring my colleague Emily Kopp in as we talk about all of the issues that are listed here. But just to wrap up this part of it, was there anything that you didn't see in this, or maybe something in our survey that you saw that in between the lines that isn't maybe readily apparent as you looked at the results, but after you thought about it for a little bit, it popped into your mind?
I think we can talk a little bit more about the agency's concern over recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
Retaining talent. That seems to be a big concern of theirs, and rightly so. But I think there are a lot of things we're doing and a lot of strategies we can model after the private sector, who always have issues with retention. And we talk a little bit more about that.
I thought that was interesting, too, because we have spent a lot of time on the station talking about the recruitment end of it and not as much maybe as we should on the retention. Hey, we already have a pretty talented workforce. Let's mm-hmm. convince them to stay. Right. It's the old sales adage. It's easier to keep a customer than go get a new one. So it's kind of the same idea.
Not just easier, but you're talking about very tight budgets and limited resources, and it's definitely more cost efficient to keep good talent.
Catherine Medina is here, and we'll continue our conversation about the our Federal News Radio Chief Human Capital Officer Survey of 2012 Priorities when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You can see all the survey results posted online now at federalnewsradio.com.
Fans, tickets to all American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the Athletic Ticket Office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena. Catch the Eagles' next home game Saturday, January 7th versus Colgate at 2 p.m.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Here's Jerry Davis, the Chief Security Officer at the VA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Emerging Technology, sponsored by EMC.
I think we're going to start seeing that over the next 5 to 10 years, where machines are more self-aware and not just aware about the environment, but what's taking place from a security perspective. It's going to have to be built in into these devices in the next 5 to 10 years, because you can't keep up with the pace with the sheer number of devices that are coming out.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Virtualization delivers big benefits, but traditional storage and backup can't handle the increased demands of virtual environments. Get on track with EMC Next Generation Unified Storage and Backup, optimized for VMware. Run virtual applications 3 times faster and reduce VMware backup times by 90%. Streamline with VM management and single-step restores. Decrease application storage by 50% and reduce backup storage by 40 to 60 times. EMC products available on GSA through government acquisitions.
How is DoD improving financial information and audit readiness? What is DoD doing to improve its operations, become more efficient, and control costs? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with his very special guest, Bob Hale, Undersecretary of Defense and Comptroller within the U.S. Department of Defense, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. Freezing storms, hot mobile devices, and a strong push from the top can do a lot to further the cause of telework. We'll review how things have changed in the last year. Plus, now you've got a budget, but it's a lean one. We'll have advice for how to get by and win with what you've got. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest Federal News, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Catherine Medina is here today, and we're talking about, among other things, the Chief Human Capital Officer's Survey of 2012 Priorities. And you can see the results of that and read more about it online at federalnewsradio.com. And in addition to Catherine, my colleague Emily Kopp is here. We were talking off the air a little bit, Emily, about the working groups that Catherine was talking about. And you had a really good question, I think, about the structure there.
Yeah, I was just curious to know where these items that the working group kind of tackles and proposes come from.
So typically the discussion is held live during our monthly full council meetings, and either the director, John Barry, who's the chair of the council, or one of the Chico council members will raise a topic, an issue for discussion. We'll discuss that and whether the Chicos are willing to take that on, who's willing to head it, and basically bring it to the floor for a vote, informal. But we vote to establish the working group, and I do a little bit of administrative work to get it going and support it as it gets off the ground.
The working groups, I think, are fascinating. I'd love to have you come back, mm-hmm. actually, sometime and talk more about those. I've spent more time on them than I promised you that I would, because I want to dig into this survey. To set the stage here, we surveyed, we asked 49 agency CHCOs to take our survey. We got 10 responses, and that's about a 20% response rate. So we can feel pretty confident that the response that we have is representative of what's going on in the minds and in the worlds of the CHCOs at the agencies. And there's some demographic information that we start with. I did think it was instructive that everybody that responded was a career employee. So we have the benefit of people who have been and theoretically will be in federal service for a long time, not the 18-month syndrome that we talk about from time to time. So the first quantitative question that we asked is, what are your priorities for 2012? And we listed about 10 things there. And the retention piece that we talked about beforehand was overwhelmingly the number one priority that CHCOs are paying attention to. So it shows what we talked about a few minutes ago, that's really on the minds of people. What are some of the most effective strategies that people are talking about for keeping good people when we have pay freeze, benefits under attack theoretically, and so forth?
Most of the Chicos are thinking about their most valued employees, thinking about what they can do to make sure they are fulfilling the needs of their employees, looking at the employee viewpoint survey results, looking at what their workforce is telling them about their management structure, about their work-life balance, about their benefits. And really, I think that there are a lot of things you can do to either boost employee morale or encourage retention. And a lot of those things are non-monetary. If you look at the private sector, most of them don't have unlimited funds either and work under tight budgets, particularly in these past few years. And, you know, if you read studies about what motivates employees and what keeps them with their employer, it's really not money driving retention. Mm-hmm. It's really more about the work they do, the autonomy they have, the level of responsibility, how much of a contribution they feel they're making, where they fit in their structure, A lot of that can be dealt with very good communication strategy and very good management, obviously.
That's good news. The pay part of it is good news in a pay freeze environment. And I've heard anecdotally stories about not just the HR people, but also the managers at all levels of the agencies doing non-money things, and not just recognition attaboys kinds of things, but figuring out wherever they can do whatever they can do to try to generate that team feeling and that idea that you can do things here that you can't do anyplace else.
Right.
The second most popular priority, or the most selected priority, was two of them: training for HR professionals, and that's a little bit more iffy in tight budget times. Training is one of the first things that goes away, and diversity. What is it that is on the minds of people who are talking about diversity in government? Is it only the more traditional diversity issues, or can you classify what you were talking about, for example, with veterans and disabled veterans? Does that go into a diversity initiative too?
Absolutely. I was just talking to my colleague, Veronica Villalobos, who is the director of our newly stood up diversity and inclusion office government-wide. And she has really been trying to drive this point home across the government, which is diversity is not the old model of color, sex, race. Mm-hmm. It really is diversity of thought. It really is making sure that, in this case, the federal workforce reflects our population. I mean, one of the examples that I know she likes to use that really resonates with people is the Katrina disaster relief example, and how if your federal aid workers are not diverse and they don't have the same cultural experiences as the population you're trying to save and communicate with, you won't know that when you go knocking on doors trying to save people, they have a fear of, you know, police or authority, and they're not going to answer the doors and you might miss them. These are real life examples that happen all the time. I mean, Katrina is obviously a very well-known example, but these are things that in a world where the federal government is sort of coming to the aid and interfacing with the public in so many different ways, Social Security, Health and Human Services, it really demands that kind of diversity. And we're doing well in some areas, and in some other areas we're just not.
On this priority list, there were a couple things that didn't show very high that I quite frankly expected to show a lot higher than they did. Hiring more people did not seem to be a priority. Making it easier for the applicants did not make it very high. It showed up number 8 was where it popped up most often. And conversely, we talked about retention already, and that showed up most as number 1, and hardly anybody else ranked it as anything but number 1. Was there anything on this list that you thought would have shown up higher or lower than it actually did?
Well, I think... I don't think I was too surprised by the rankings. I think in the examples that you pointed out with applicant satisfaction, frankly, I think that if you're a Chico and you're looking at applicant satisfaction, I think if you feel like you're making progress, then maybe it becomes less of a priority in ranking because you know there's progress being made. Not that it's not important to you, but if you feel like sort of we're going to hit the mark on that, then you can sort of say, well, but these other things really require more of our focus.
Yeah.
So there are things that are important, but sort of establishing what's important and what's urgent,
okay.
Not always the same thing.
Well,
and if I can just come in, I mean, I think it's also reflecting the budget reality. I mean, hiring, making it easier for applicants might be all well and good, but if you can't hire people in the first place, then it really doesn't matter.
Right.
So in some respects, you know, this idea about just retaining, getting the people that you have even better, keeping them there, is just more of a practical reality today than hiring more people.
I guess if you think about it too, in the context of the avalanche of applications that you get, making it easier for more people to apply probably isn't really. I hadn't thought of it that way, but it's a good point. All right, that's the fourth question. Our fifth question on the survey: what do you see as the biggest HR challenge facing your agency? And the answer here was overwhelming. Pay freezes and cuts to employee benefits make it hard to recruit and retain talent. I wonder, though, to be fair, if that's not more perception than reality, as we just talked about the fact that people that do this kind of work, whatever they're doing in government, aren't just in it for the money, And money isn't the number one driver for an employee being satisfied and happy in his or her job. So I wonder if there's maybe a little bit of a disconnect there with what we saw in the results from this one.
Well, I think you can kind of slice it a couple of different ways. So recruiting and retention isn't driven by money, but if the agency itself is seeing budget cuts, and they could come programmatically or they could come administratively, and then you lose the FTE position. So it's a little bit of a different thing. You might be able to recruit and retain. You might even have a decent rewards and recognition program. But if you end up doing a RIF or, you know, downsizing or losing funding for an entire program, you've got a serious morale problem. Mm-hmm. So you can be doing well in sort of, you know, running against the tide and then have something, a budget cut in another area that really affects you.
That's Catherine Medina from the Chief Human Capital Officers Council and my colleague Emily Kopp in studio with me this afternoon as we review the results of Federal News Radio's Federal Chief Human Capital Officer Survey of 2012 priorities. And we'll continue our conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships to understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at techsystems.com. TEKSystems.com.
It takes on targets with unmatched accuracy, from armor and air defense units to maritime patrol craft, artillery, radar sites, bunkers, enemy command centers. It is JAGM, the joint air-to-ground missile designed by Lockheed Martin, meeting all Army, Navy, and Marine Corps requirements for employing precision-guided weapons from rotary wing, fixed wing, and unmanned aerial systems, with margins that reduce risk and get JAGM to the warfighters on time, enhancing capabilities while expanding mission flexibility, effectiveness, and survivability, saving dollars and saving lives. Lockheed Martin's JAGM builds on decades of experience and over 10 years of the most rigorous testing, rolling off the same production lines as the combat-proven Hellfire. JAGM from Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
Hey, Angie. Wow, you did it, didn't you? You went over to...
Mm-hmm. Went to Walmart and got the Pioneer DEH44 HD with built-in HD radio technology.
New HD2, HD3 channels, digital sound quality, and no subscription fees.
You got it. Hey, come on, let's ride. Since the Pioneer DEH44 HD is only $120 at Walmart, I'm taking you out for dinner.
Nice.
HD radio. More radio, more value. Now in the car audio department at Walmart.
The echoing argument. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. If you argue with your family, your friends may be next. Researchers at UCLA recruited nearly 600 high school freshmen to keep a diary and checklist for 2 weeks, reporting on their daily activities. That included the times they argued and with whom. Andrew Fellini is a professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Psychology at UCLA.
Arguments in one relationship, for example, peer relationships, would predict having an argument with parents and other family members the next day and vice versa.
The effects were, in some cases, long term.
Having an argument with your family predicted being more likely to have an argument with your friends not just the next day, but even 2 days later.
Preparation of the paper in the journal Child Development was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are reviewing the results of Federal News Radio's Chief Human Capital Officer Survey for 2012 priorities. You can see those results posted now at federalnewsradio.com. And reviewing them in studio with my colleague Emily Kopp and also with Catherine Medina of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council. One of the results of this survey, Catherine, that I thought was really interesting came on question six. What concerns you the most about the impacts of budget cuts at your agency? And we asked the Chief Human Capital Officers to rank them in order. There were three responses three people checked off, I have no concerns. That's a fair amount of people who don't seem to be bothered by budget cuts at all and think it's really not going to affect them. That's good news, I guess.
Yeah, I guess if I could modify my earlier answer where you asked me, is there anything on here that surprises you?
You can change anytime.
I think I forgot about that one. Yeah, I don't know if that was tongue-in-cheek or somebody who just feels like they've been... one of the things we were talking about off air was, you know, a lot of these Chicos, they are career professionals. Mm-hmm. They have been in the government quite a long time. They have seen the budget cuts of the 90s. They know what is coming this way. And hopefully they've got some lessons learned. Mm-hmm. And they may be in an agency that has built up a strategy ahead of what's to come.
All right. Some of the other big responses to that question, what concerns you the most about the impact of budget cuts? Not being able to keep good employees, that mm-hmm. fits with the retention thing that we've already talked about. Not being able to train employees in key skills so they can perform better. Mm-hmm. That says to me that the Chicos understand the performance part of it, that for a long time in government, I'm not sure that connection was being made. Is that mm-hmm. is that fair to say, do you think?
I think that's fair to say. I think that, again, if you look at the survey results and the priorities that the Chicos have outlined, and you look at the working groups, the things that we're doing in the council as we speak, we have a performance management working group. We're working with Labor Management Relations Council. We have a new model for performance management. We're piloting across six different agencies and departments as we speak. We have an HR university that we stood up earlier this year that is aimed at training HR professionals but is now being more broadly applied to training supervisors and managers mm-hmm. and sharing that training, which means saving resources and leveraging our training dollars.
The question number eight is, to what extent have hiring reform efforts helped you recruit and hire talent? And as I read the results of the survey, I thought and far be it for me to ever put words in John Barry's mouth. But as I saw the results of this one, I thought if there was one question that he probably would like to see different results, it might be this one, because 60% of our respondents chose a moderate extent rather than a great extent. And, I mean, his hiring reform plan has been quite ambitious, quite well received, especially in Congress. But it doesn't look like it's quite gotten the kind of effect yet that the CHCOs would like to see. Is that reasonable, do you think?
I think, again, if you look at the timing, you had 10 respondents and six of them said to a moderate amount, mm-hmm. hiring reform has helped you recruit and hire talent. And it's really very possible, I could name five probably off the top of my head, that any or most of those six agencies are under a hiring freeze and have been really since, I know a couple of them have been under hiring freezes for over a year.
Yeah.
And so if you ask that question and your situation is, I'm a Chico who hasn't been able to hire for 18 months or longer, yeah, again, is it important to me? Is hiring reform important? And will it have long-lasting impact on my agency? Yes. But what is it doing for me today? Maybe not as much.
Yeah. Question number nine, the 2011 Employee Viewpoint Survey showed one of employees' most common complaints is about dealing with poor performers. Now, this has been an issue for human capital managers in government since, I think, the establishment of government in 1787. So it's not surprising that this is on the minds of people. But the best way to fix the problem, 40% four people chose, have top agency leaders demonstrate this issue is critical to the agency's mission. They're just looking for leadership. Right. What do you see as far as that leadership being pushed down, where leaders at agencies, not just human capital leaders, but leaders overall, saying we're serious about this and we want to keep the really good people and make sure the folks that aren't making a grade get out?
Well, the director has spoken about the issue with performance management in the federal government several times over the past year or so. It's one of the reasons he asked for the joint task force between the Chico Council and the Labor Management Relations Council. And they did come up with their recommendations just last month. And of the six agencies that are piloting this new performance management system or components of this, they definitely have leadership buy-in. I mean, they really can't do a full-scale performance management change and sort of an enterprise change and culture change without commitment from the very top. And they talked about this extensively. I was part of that working group. We talked about it over and over again, needing commitment from the White House, particularly political appointees that come in. How do you get on their radar when they come in? How do you keep that level of importance and high profile with them that performance management matters? Mm-hmm. And so I'm hopeful that this new gear model of performance management is going to attack and address those issues.
Well, let's detour there for a second if we can, because that's an issue that is not just important here, but it permeates all of the issues that we're dealing with, since we're hearing in this survey from career people who then work with and for, in some cases, political people who do have an 18-month to 2-year shelf life in most cases. What's that dynamic like as far as being in almost a constant state of educating up, where you're trying to teach somebody who's coming in what your problems are, what your priorities are, what your challenges are, and what you think the solutions are?
Well, I think that for a lot of agencies and many deputy Chicos and deputy secretaries that I've worked with, they really get it. They really, and the politicals came in sort of getting it and understanding the importance of performance management. I think it's going to be really important. And one of the things this group talked about was sustainability. And to do something of this level, to have the labor management group come with the Chicos, which has been an unprecedented collaboration, and to come up with a set of recommendations, to have it piloted across the government, and then to have a change in tide or sort of just even the timing of the political environment, and anything that might knock it sort of off of off balance is really a concern. And again, they talked about it, they addressed it, and I really think that because you have so many career people and the labor management group very heavily invested in this, it has a very, very good chance of success.
I want to talk about the impact of the labor management groups when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Catherine Medina of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council is here reviewing the results of our survey of Chief Human Capital Officers priorities for 2012, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I join the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates, if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Newsmakers talk to Emily Kopp.
DHS National Cybersecurity Education Strategy Director Peggy Maxson.
The problem with establishing a cybersecurity professional field is the fact that we couldn't even talk DHS to Health and Human Services to the National Security Agency about the duties of system administration, which should be a common duty across the federal government.
Hear the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive. Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, reviewing the results of our Chief Human Capital Officer survey on 2012 priorities. You can read more about it, and you can also see the survey results and hear what some Chief Human Capital Officers have to say about their priorities for 2012. Posted it online now at federalnewsradio.com. It's our top story. My colleague Emily Kopp is in studio to participate in our conversation with Catherine Medina of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council. And you, Emily, have been covering labor management forums as events have developed there. And we have your stories obviously posted online on the website, too. What are your observations about what you've seen as in covering them?
Well, when you look at this survey, the idea that supervisors or managers need more training and need, again, to know how to deal with poor performers or how to reward good performers. Mm-hmm. This is something that I think pervades all levels, whether it's unions are concerned about it, management associations are concerned about it. Here we see that the chief human capital officers are concerned about it. So at least everybody is on the same page. Mm-hmm. And while they might not have the resources that they need to devote to training people now, everybody kind of recognizes that it is a priority. And so it's only natural that they're saying that these top agency leaders should also give whatever they can to show that everybody is in alignment.
Our question number 10 on the survey, Catherine, has to do with those partnerships and how they've helped resolve HR issues. As I read the question and saw the results, I wondered if that's, I mean, that's certainly not the only job of those partnerships, of those forums, to resolve HR issues. It sounds pretty grand, and it strikes me that that may or may not be what the question might have should have been getting at. Was it might have been geared more toward just how they're working at helping agencies understand the other side of the table. Is that reasonable?
I think that's fair. I think the question, if asked in a more broad context of, you know, maybe how have the relationships progressed?
Yeah. And what do you see in those relationships?
Well, again, if you just look at this collaboration on performance management, it's a collaboration that's never happened before. And sitting in on those meetings, I can say from the first meeting to the last one was like night and day.
Mm-hmm.
We really went in sort of everybody in their corners.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it a little painful at the first few moments. And then, you know, by the end of the first meeting, you feel like you made some progress. By the end of the 2 or 3 months that this group worked together, literally day and night on these recommendations, you really felt like you had made huge strides in the relationship.
What did you get a sense of from the labor folks about their big concerns and understanding them and how you can mesh them with what the CHCOs and the other managers have to achieve?
I think that the timing of the budget cuts and what we've seen as far as focus on the federal workforce and benefits and pay really have brought the groups together. And possibly, you know, if you're looking for a silver lining, possibly this collaboration on performance management wouldn't have happened in another time in another environment.
Mm-hmm.
Because what became really clear was that we were after the same underlying effect, which is better performance mm-hmm. from our workforce. And there's not anybody who's going to stand up and say, we don't want our workforce to perform most efficiently. We're all taxpayers.
Right.
So we all want that. We may come at it from different perspectives, but we were able to meet in the middle and really go forward with that underlying goal.
Well, it's an interesting point because every conversation over the years that I've been covering this that I've had with a leader of a union, they've brought up, regardless of the topic, mm-hmm. they've brought up unprompted, we're not here to protect poor performers,
right.
Sometimes very far afield, but it always gets mm-hmm. in there somehow. So they've obviously for a long time been making an effort to say to anybody that they can, we don't. They make us look bad.
Right.
We are not interested in that.
Right.
So that that's not surprising to me. I guess it's surprising that that there was a lot of ground for you and labor to cover, and it's encouraging that you're doing that.
I think that this question, however, and I'm not sure what was in the minds of the people who answered it, but it does reflect this positive working relationship at that top level. What I'm hearing at some agencies, though, that the local forums between labor and management are not going so well.
Mm-hmm.
At some, the Social Security Administration, at least when I last talked to the management associations, they were upset that they weren't even allowed a seat at the table because the union did not want them there.
Mm.
So that's a concern that's not happening at the national level. Just today, the AFGE, which represents transportation security officials, was complaining about the breakdown of relations between their union and the Transportation Security Administration.
Mm-hmm.
So at these local levels where the rubber hits the road, there's still a lot of friction.
How do you push that down and replicate the success that you're having at the top level to make sure that it filters all the way down?
I think continuous focus at the Chico level and above. I mean, Director Barry is always very focused on those relationships at the national level. We talk as a council about some of these issues that come up from the Chico saying, you know, I'm having an issue at the local level. And we talk about it. So, you know, where one agency maybe has made more progress and they're able to give some advice. And I've heard the director give some advice, you know, to certain agencies that are struggling.
All right, we've got a couple more questions to cover and not much time to do it. So we're going to take another break and come back with Catherine Medina of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council and my colleague Emily Kopp as we review the results of our Federal News Radio Chief Human Capital Officers Survey on 2012 priorities when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
At Hyundai, we build more than just cars. We build relationships.
We're all like one big family.
We're all Americans. I mean, we're working together to build, you know, a great car.
I enjoy it. I enjoy coming to work. I enjoy working at Hyundai.
I feel a sense of pride. I feel a sense of accomplishment, something that we all can rejoice in because we've done this together.
I love working with my team. We're more of a family.
I love my job.
Teamwork becomes friendship. A job becomes a career. Work becomes a thing of pride.
They allow you to grow with the company. That is Hyundai. That's the difference.
This is not just a job. This is a career. We have a career here.
It makes me proud that, you know, I'm here.
Every single person that I work with, I consider family.
We all make a difference. That's why teamwork is so important.
Proud partner in the American dream. Dream with us at HyundaiAmerica.us.
This is my second home, my second family, so I love being here.
Hyundai. New thinking. New possibilities.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships to understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TekSystems.com.
How can I keep my child healthy during flu season? My teenager's always online. How can I be sure he's not into something harmful? Parents Perspective has the answers. Sundays at 4 p.m. on WFED 1500 AM. Designate Parents Perspective 44415 with a generous donation in the combined federal campaign or online at www.parentsperspective.org. Thank you for helping Parents Perspective work for you.
Hello, this is Peter Bergman. Please join the Salvation Army and Bergman's Cleaning for the 20th annual Share the Warmth Coats for Kids in the Needy Drive. If you have one or more cold weather coats that you can spare, please donate them for this worthy cause by calling Bergman's. Bergman's will refresh and clean and deliver them to the Salvation Army for distribution to the needy of the Washington metro area. Thanks to you, over 490,000 coats have been collected in the past 19 years. Please make this year's a success by calling Bergman's at 703-247-7600. Thank you.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Reviewing the results of our Chief Human Capital Officer's Survey of 2012 Priorities, and you can read more about it at federalnewsradio.com and see all the results as well. I'm joined by my colleague Emily Kopp, who covers human capital and workforce issues for Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com, and Catherine Medina of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council. It's been great to have you here, by the way. We're running out of time, and we just have a couple more to cover, but I appreciate your time and coming in and talking about this today, Catherine. Mm-hmm. A couple of the questions I want to make sure that we hit on. I would guess at year end, the story that people focused on most when it comes to HR issues in 2011 was the USAjobs.gov story. And there were the documented problems at the beginning that Emily covered, and you can read about those on federalnewsradio.com. I was surprised then, I have to say, to see that the answer most commonly chosen to the question, to what extent do you believe moving from Monster to OPM, taking it in-house, was the best choice for your agency in our survey, was I'm not sure. A lot of folks didn't seem to have the struggles with it internally that it looked like people were having externally. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Or is it just the way it is, do you think?
So 55% to a great or moderate extent, they believed that it was the right choice. Mm-hmm. And then 44 said they weren't sure. And, you know, being on the working group that handled the transition from USA Jobs outside to in-house, and this was a Chico Council project that was voted on unanimously by the council. So I would be, you know, a little concerned if there were sort of dissent. And there mm-hmm. wasn't really. I mean, you had every Chico pretty much stand behind the decision, even though, you know, out of the box, you know, things were a little rocky, as we all know. It was, you know, unfortunate out of, you know, the transition, but we've recovered and, you know, things seem to be going very well now. So I think there was just an understanding that beginning stumbling really didn't have anything to do with the underlying decisions. We mm-hmm. made those decisions based on many, many discussions about technical issues, about security issues, about things that are really more long term. Mm-hmm. So I think that the council, rightly so, is standing behind their decision.
The last question I want to make sure we get to is number 16. To what extent do you believe your agency's senior decision makers, including the secretary, deputy secretary, and CFO, value your input? 60% of the respondents said a great extent, the highest choice. That should, I imagine you take that that's very good news to you.
Yes, I think it is. And It would be great, I think, to see maybe some historical data on that,
yeah,
or whether that's trending upwards, or I can't imagine it's trending downwards.
What is your sense, though?
My sense is that it's probably trending upwards. And I think that given the complexities around human capital right now with budget, workforce, succession planning, and those types of issues, that human capital is becoming more mainstream as far as top-level management and decision-making, and really the understanding that your workforce is your most valuable asset and really treating those professionals accordingly.
There are a total of 19 questions on this survey, Emily.
Sure, and I don't know if we actually have time to go into this, but I would be curious to know whether that change, the value of what the Chicos are saying, is actually coming from the HR staff getting their seat at the table and making a difference and making these issues known, or if it's coming from agency leaders themselves.
Mm-hmm. Do you have thoughts about that, Catherine?
No, I really don't. I know that the work we do within the council has become much more important, relevant, and visible over the last 2 years. And I think that if you think about the conversations at the deputy secretary level and the secretary level, I think maybe, you know, a few years ago, they'd be like, Chico, okay, you know, I know they're a member of my staff. They handle workforce. And now it's like, oh, they're responsible for hiring reform. They're responsible for our vets numbers. They're the key person on performance management. Those are really big things to have in your portfolio.